With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
The East Texas city of Lufkin in Angelina County was founded in 1882 as a stop for the East and West Texas Railway. It served the portion of the railway running from Houston to Shreveport, Louisiana. A general store, a grocery, and a post office went up immediately, and the surrounding area's lumber industry that contributed to Lufkin's quick boom also provided stability for the new city and the region for years to come. In 1890, when Lufkin was officially incorporated, three extremely prosperous lumber families came together there to form the Angelina County Lumber Company. Large and innovative sawmills and paper mills were erected, and the Angelina County Lumber Company made money hand over fist as they supplied their products to virtually every builder, newspaper, and government entity in East Texas, and plenty beyond. By the time the Second Industrial Revolution period was wrapping up, Lufkin's fate as a lumber town was sealed, at least for years to come, and the mills there were state-of-the-art. As the city grew, so too did the way the community lived and socialized. In the mid-20th century, a civic center and community college came to town, as did shopping malls and a nightlife. Lufkin's economy, by the year 2000, had grown to beyond merely lumber, as poultry processing, medical facilities, the school district, and, of course, the oil industry became the city's largest employers. Lufkin always remained modest as far as population, which stands around 35,000 today, as did the city's economic footprint on the state. The crime rate, however, is high, about 66% higher than the national average, in fact. Though thefts and burglaries make up a majority of the crime data, the data for violent crimes is significantly lower, except in the case of sexual assault, which shows Lufkin as well above the U.S. average. Homicide, or murder specifically, is more a rarity in the East Texas city. In the year 2000, among the handful of homicides that occurred there, was one of the most gruesome and senseless the Lufkin police had ever seen, the murder of 26-year-old Megan Curl. Megan Kristen Romero was born on October 1, 1973, in Adana, Turkey, at the U.S. Incirlik Air Base to Sherry and Ernesto Romero, who was stationed there as a captain in the Army. Later, the couple welcomed two more children into their lives, Megan's brothers, Josh and Sean. When she was in first grade, Megan began attending special education classes after she was diagnosed with what is described as a very mild mental disability. Because of Megan's learning difficulties, life was difficult for her. Though others didn't always accept and sometimes teased Megan about her disability, her mother said, she refused to stoop to the level of a reciprocal name-calling instead offering kind words in return. Though the life of a career military captain had the Romero family frequently moving, they finally settled in Lufkin, Texas, when Megan was in high school. At Lufkin High, Megan joined the Christians in Action Club and was in the LP Corps, presumably a group that performed routines at the school's pep rallies for the Lufkin Panthers. As a teenager, Megan remained friendly and fun-loving, and though her naivety and overly trusting nature was likely something that helped her develop friendships, they're also the precise characteristics, unfortunately, that predatory individuals look for. Megan was vulnerable, her mother Sherry said. Because Megan was so trusting and was so outgoing, she tended to be an easy target for some of these men. Men absolutely could tell that Megan wanted to please, that Megan wanted somebody to care for her, and that she was lonely. Megan got married when she was only 18, her last name changing from Romero to Curl. She and her husband moved to Arkansas, where they lived together for 3 years, but he was abusive to Megan, and they divorced. When 21-year-old Megan returned to Lufkin, she refused to move in with her parents. She wanted independence and got her own apartment. For 5 years, the young woman flourished on her own. Megan worked at the Pilgrim's Pride processing plant, where she was dedicated and valued. She regularly attended church on Sundays at Providence Baptist and went out dancing on the weekends, something she particularly enjoyed. On the week of March 19, 2000, Megan met up with her mother, Sherry, to do some shopping. Megan was excited, Sherry said, that she had enough money left after paying bills to go buy some new outfits and makeup. That day was one of the things that I hold dear to my heart, was the last day I got to spend with her. Sherry, who would never see her daughter alive again, said.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On the night of Saturday, March 25th, 2000, Megan Curl went to a local Lufkin nightclub, the Electric Cowboy, to dance. When she went out dancing on the weekend, which was nearly every Friday and Saturday evening, Megan usually went alone, but she had plenty of friends who also frequented the clubs to mingle with. Though exactly what he meant is unclear, Lufkin Police Lieutenant Mike Shapaka would later comment that Megan was known to, quote, dance pretty provocatively. A man was seen buying Megan one or two drinks and speaking with her, though the two didn't spend the entire night together. The man was a stranger, unknown to witnesses who would later describe him. Locals said they never saw him before or since. Megan was friendly with both the patrons and the employees of the Electric Cowboy, but on this night, she was asked to leave the club for reasons never made clear. It was an unusual event. Megan decided to walk to another club a couple blocks away, called the Sports Shack. She didn't have to walk, though, as Megan ran into a friend outside the Electric Cowboy who gave her a ride. After being dropped off at the Sports Shack, Megan spent a while dancing and talking with several friends before accepting a ride home from the bar's bouncer. The Sports Shack bouncer, also a friend of Megan's, dropped her off in front of her home at the Fox Run Apartments just before 1:30 a.m., now Sunday, March 26, 2000. When she approached her building, Megan knocked on the door of a friend and fellow Fox Run Apartments tenant. The friend had waited up for Megan to make sure she made it home okay. The two talked for nearly an hour as Megan told her friend that all she wanted was for someone to love her, sometimes sobbing. Suddenly, something disturbed their conversation.
"There's this guy in his car and he was speeding really fast and he just did a dead stop,"
Megan's friend said, adding that the driver didn't get out of the car. The driver, she thought, was a man she'd met at the bar earlier that night, Megan told her, as she approached the dark-colored vehicle. Megan and the driver began talking, and her friend went inside her apartment. And then, when I went back out, the car was still there, but neither one of them was there. They were gone. At approximately 2:20 a.m., Megan's friend was a little worried about her and wanted to make sure everything was all right before she went to bed. She left her apartment, walked up to Megan's, and knocked on the door. Megan answered, only opening the door about a foot, but it was enough for the friend to see that the driver, the man, was in the apartment with her. He was wearing wire-rimmed glasses on what was described as his baby face. She said, "I was right, it was my friend from the club, and I looked down to him and he just nodded his head slowly and didn't say a word, and I didn't speak to him at all either. I said, 'Well, you sure you're okay?' And she said, 'Yes, I'm fine,' Megan's friend said." They said goodbye and Megan closed and locked the door. It was the last time anyone outside of Megan Curl's apartment would see her alive. At around 4:30 a.m. in the early morning hours of Sunday, March 26, 2000, a resident of the Fox Run Apartments caught the strong scent of smoke. When they investigated the smell, they saw flames and smoke billowing from Megan Curl's apartment window and quickly called 911. The Lufkin Fire Department responded, breaking down Megan's locked door. The fire was confined to the bedroom, and firefighters extinguished the blaze, uncovering a horrible and gruesome scene: the charred body of a woman. After putting out the blaze, fire department investigators struggled finding the cause of the fire. They couldn't determine if an accelerant was used. There were more pressing matters at the scene anyway. The burned remains of 26-year-old Megan Curl, later positively identified by dental records, laid sprawled on her bed. Her hands and feet were tied to the bedposts with pantyhose and a belt. A plastic garbage bag was over her head. At autopsy, it was discovered that Megan's throat had also been slashed twice, once on the left side and once on the right. The cuts to Megan's neck were described as very deep. Lufkin Police Lieutenant Mike Shapaka later remarked that though the burning was undoubtedly gruesome, what she endured before the fact was the most troubling to imagine. Her throat cut, a bag and pillow placed over her head, and she'd also been strangled, he said. The autopsy found no traces of drugs or alcohol in her system. Either the drinks bought for her at the Electric Cowboy were not alcoholic, or she drank very little alcohol. Whether or not Megan was sexually assaulted was never released by police.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lufkin detectives were appalled by Megan's murder and felt an immediate and strong desire to find the perpetrator. Lieutenant David Young was called in and charged with investigating the terrible crime. Though most of Megan's nightgown had burnt off, enough remained to identify it as such. It was later determined to be an important clue, since ex-boyfriends of the young woman told police that Megan would only wear a nightgown or negligee when she planned on being intimate with another. Most often, she just wore shorts and a t-shirt to bed. Detectives began speaking with anyone and everyone who knew Megan, particularly those who saw her that night and those who she'd been romantically involved with at some point. Since Megan's friend and neighbor had seen the man she'd been with about 2 hours before 911 was called to report the fire, she gave police his description. The baby-faced man had a small build and was in his 20s or early 30s, Megan's friend recalled. He wore wire-rimmed glasses, had blonde hair, and had a light-colored mustache. A man who could have matched that description was a past boyfriend of the slain woman, one who'd caused Megan, according to witnesses, a lot of problems and grief, to quote Police Lieutenant Mike Shapaka. 29-year-old Timothy Blaine Purvis had been released from prison just a week before Megan's murder, which sounded the radar rather loudly. Lufkin detectives thought he was as strong a suspect as any, but they had no physical evidence linking him to the crime, and Purvis had an alibi. He told police he was at his mother's watching movies that night, which she confirmed. His mother did describe him, though, as coming home one day nervous and bothered by something. It's unclear exactly when, but around the time of Megan's murder.
"Oh my God, Mama, what did I do?"
she quoted him as saying. All the cops had was that he was recently incarcerated, and even that was somewhat of a stretch since his record consisted of all nonviolent crimes. He did fail a polygraph exam. If it was Timothy Blaine Purvis who committed the depraved act, he'll never be brought to justice since he died in 2003. Regardless, the lead went nowhere, and other than the composite sketches of the man who was last seen with Megan and the man seen buying her drinks at the Electric Cowboy, they had little to nothing to go on. The stranger at the bar was described as dark-complexioned, possibly Hispanic, with dark hair and has a mustache, goatee, and is wearing a cowboy hat in the composite sketch, a far different description than that of the man seen at her apartment. Sherry, Megan's mother, has always believed that it was someone her daughter knew well who committed the murder. Megan, Sherry says, wouldn't have gotten into a vehicle with a man she didn't trust completely, let alone bring him into her apartment. Sherry told reporters the perpetrator's brutality suggests that the crime was personal, that it was someone who was intensely angry with Megan. Thinking her daughter was killed at the hands of an individual who she trusted, Sherry said, made it even more painful for her. However, Megan's words to her friend and neighbor that she'd met the man she was last seen with at a bar that night suggests that the perpetrator wasn't someone who Megan knew enough to trust. That friend, too, had never seen the man before. Megan's slang seems almost methodical, as if perhaps it wasn't planned out specifically for revenge, but done instead for the pleasure the madman gleaned from the act itself, covering their tracks by the final act of setting her body ablaze to destroy evidence. Ultimately, the case went cold, even after tips were provided to law enforcement after, in 2001, the television series Unsolved Mysteries presented Megan's case. None of the tips led anywhere. Several confessions by incarcerated braggarts seeking prison cred, and on the outside, wannabe thugs seeking badass status amongst seemingly sick groups of friends, also led nowhere.
"I've been from Houston to Austin on some of these tips, and I'm not the only investigator. I had this 3 years after the case initiated, and the investigators, the first ones, worked very hard on those for a long time,"
Lufkin Police Lieutenant Mike Shapaka told a reporter.
"There were several leads we thought we had, but then it would always turn out to be false leads."
The lieutenant alluded that he had a suspect in mind in 2002, but was frustrated that he and past investigators couldn't come up with the evidence to bring to the prosecutor. DNA, Lieutenant Shapaka repeatedly insisted, was what could break the case, suggesting that they were indeed able to collect biological forensic evidence. "Advances in forensic technology," he said, "is the key to finding out who perpetrated the horrible crime." Some amateur sleuths have theorized a connection between Megan Curl's murder and the 2006 disappearance of a Brownsboro, Texas woman. On Wednesday, August 6th of that year, 23-year-old Brandy Ellen Wells was visiting her mother in Tyler, Texas, where she planned to stay the night. Brandy left her mother's apartment, and after visiting a family friend at a local bowling alley bar, she headed to Longview to go out dancing at some clubs there. Longview is about 38 miles east of Tyler and 85 miles northwest of Lufkin. Brandy told her mother that she was headed to a club called the Electric Cowboy, a separate location of the same chain of clubs as the one in Lufkin. Regardless, she didn't end up there anyway. Instead, she ended up at a club called Graham Central Station. Though Brandy was seen speaking with two men on the club surveillance, and witnesses said that she was there asking for gas money, she hasn't been seen since. The Graham Central Station cameras captured her entering the club alone at 10:30 p.m. and leaving alone at about 12:30 a.m. Brandy Wells' car was found later that morning, August 3, 2006, at about 9:15 a.m. on the side of Interstate 20 by a Texas state trooper, though the car wouldn't be identified as Brandy's for 6 days. It wasn't identified because it was only tagged with a tow if not moved warning and left there. When the trooper found the vehicle, the driver's side door was ajar. When the family finally inspected the car, the first thing they noticed is that the seat was positioned for a driver about 6 feet tall, and Brandy was only 4'11". A gas can found in the trunk of the vehicle is thought to not have belonged to her. Though the club's surveillance shows Brandy leaving alone, a man in a cowboy hat walks out directly behind her, going the opposite way, and Brandy turns and walks after him. There are some, but few, other details about Brandy Wells' disappearance, including but not limited to an arguably non-aggressive investigation by police. Little is known about what investigators did or didn't uncover, including the identity of the man in the cowboy hat and whether or not a man whose name and phone number were found on a napkin in Brandy's car was ever able to be completely ruled out. On Sunday, October 29, 2006, the body of Dana Lynn Dodd was found burning in an oil field off Fritz Swanson Road in Kilgore, Texas, about 77 miles north of Lufkin. Dana's identity wouldn't be known for 13 years, and she became referred to as Lavender Doe, named after the purple sweater she wore. Because of, at the time, Lavender Doe's description, Brandy Wells' mother thought it might be her daughter, until DNA proved otherwise. Dana Dodd was from Florida, and according to the man who confessed to her murder, Joseph Wayne Burnett, she was selling magazines in an area Walmart parking lot, and he lured her into his car. Further details of exactly what happened haven't been fully expounded upon by tight-lipped investigators, though it is known that semen was found on the scene with Dana's body, and she is thought to have been raped. Dana Dodd was never reported missing. It isn't known if her case has been theorized by police to be connected to either Brandy Wells' case or Megan Curl's case. Joseph Wayne Burnett confessed to killing Dana Dodd, whose name he couldn't recall, right after he confessed to the murder of his girlfriend, Felicia Pearson, in 2018. The DNA Doe Project is responsible for giving Dana Lynn Dodd her name back. When Megan Curl was killed, her mother, Sherry, underwent a crippling depression. Ironically, when she overheard her sister say to her husband, "Sherry is not going to make it out of this. She's not going to come back from this," she snapped out of it. "That's when I decided, in my heart of hearts, I am going to make it out of this," she said. That isn't to say that Sherry doesn't still struggle with everyday sense, not knowing why Megan died. How someone could commit acts so horrific is a question only Megan's murderer can answer. But the nagging uncertainty of who did this terrible thing must, of course, first be discovered.
"I would just like to be able to know who it was, know for a fact, know beyond a shadow of a doubt who it was," Sherry said. "Is it going to bring her back to me? No, I'm not foolish enough to think that. Do I know she's in a better place right now? Absolutely."
If you have any information about the murder of Megan Kristen Romero Curl, please help her family find answers and justice by calling Lufkin Crime Stoppers at 936-639-8477. The Dibble Free Press, the Tyler Morning Telegraph, the Longview News Journal, KTRE.com, Unsolved.com, CBS19.tv, The DNA Doe Project, CityofLufkin.com, and the television series Unsolved Mysteries were used as sources for this episode. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and $2.50 a month gives you access to Patreon-exclusive episodes that cover mostly solved crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them, from the thrill killers to the Odessa Lust murderer. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. It's a huge help with the cost associated with producing the show, and Erica and I appreciate it beyond words. Thanks for listening, y'all.